everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. I'm with you today and with your help today because we'll be taking your calls also today. We're going to explore the theme of fear and risk, both. Yum. Fear and risk. Fear and risk. You know, who do you think are the latest, who do you think are the people in the world that are, or in all of Europe, the unhappiest people? Here's a recent survey. The unhappiest people in Europe happen to be the Ukrainians. I mean, based on a number of different ways of judging it, just plain depression, sadness, and fear. More in the Ukraine than anywhere else in Europe. Now, they also, coincidentally, have the shortest life expectancy. Now, that's kind of telling us something. Teaching us a little bit. Why? Why particularly in the Ukraine? Well, what do they fear the most? And it seems that if when concerned and when interviewed, they mostly talk about their fears. And their fears, the greatest fears are losing jobs. That's one. The other fear, now this was a survey done in 2004. The greatest fear of the people in the Ukraine was the fear of rise in prices and utilities because they were all living very close to the vest. And when you're living that close, a rise in prices, could you imagine what's going on there now with utilities escalating at the rate that they are? It must be overwhelming. It must be completely overwhelming. I mean, it's somewhat overwhelming from what I understand with Americans, you know, in the Southwest. I understand that people are spending 11% to 15% of their income on traveling, on gas. 11% to 15% is the cost of gas, and compared to how they have to travel and how much they consume and where they have to travel, you got to usually travel 100 miles to go to work. Yeah. People work in the outlying regions. They work at factories. They don't live near the factories. 11% to 15% here in the Northeast, it's about 1%. About 1% of your income goes towards gas for most people, you know, on average. 11% to 15%. You live in fear, and now you sit and you stand by and you watch. And so Americans are standing by and watching, and fear is growing. Fear grows because you watch and you say, what do I do next? Oh, no, they're raising the price of water. It's one of the things that happened in New York recently, a major increase in the taxes on water. So they're raising the price of water. The prices are raising, and you get scared. Now, how does fear work? What does it do to you? Lester Levinson used to say, fear and it will appear. Quite an expression. He'd observed that fear of any type or degree, from extreme chronic anxiety and panic attacks to the run-of-the-mill worrying and fretting, even the jitters, is a sticking place for our consciousness. Now, that's a very interesting concept, a sticking place for your consciousness. Did your mind ever get stuck? You tell your mind, get out of there. Get caught. I had one recently, a song that was in my mind. I had a song stuck in my brain. Get out of my brain, will you? Song every I couldn't. Day and night, I kept remembering this song over and over again. A song from childhood, no less. And there it was. Kept coming back. It's sticking point. It was like I had a record. You remember records, phonographs? And they had this little grooves, and in the groove there might have been like a place that stuck. That's what I had in my brain. I had a sticking point. Well, fear of any form is a sticking place. By placing a continual emphasis on avoiding what we fear, by always thinking about, we got to watch out. We got to watch out for, you know, we have to be careful. We can't afford to be poor. We can't afford to. We have to be careful. Then we're reminding ourselves over and over again, like a perverse mantra, you know, fear is like, it's like this strange repetition over and over again. People who are afraid and who have a lot of fears, they reinforce the fear over and over again in their brain because they keep repeating it. See, when you're afraid of, you're afraid of what? When you're afraid of losing your job, you walk around and you walk through your job afraid of losing your job. And of course, that makes you very look funny. You see? And then the jitters take over and, you know, it's almost inevitable you lose your job. Almost like the fear of something makes it happen. Well, that's a theory and it's very interesting. Because in a way, it limits our happiness and our freedom. We know that. Nobody likes to be afraid. It prevents us from doing what we'd like or need to do because we have all of these expectations around taking action. You know, we say, well, if we do this, then this will happen. If we do that, then this will happen. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind talking about fear, and we're going to be asking you about your fears today. There's an acronym I want you to understand. F-E-A-R stands for, you ready? False evidence appearing real. F-E-A-R. False evidence appearing real. Because some people's fearful expectations are totally unfounded. See, fear is always about the future. Fear is what if, you know, and it's about the future. You know, regret is always about the past. Fear is about the future. So it's like a false expectation. It's clear that anything that can help us let go of fear more likely can make a tremendous difference in our lives. So what's the secret behind letting go of fear? And I'm going to tell you today, there is a secret. It may surprise you. Nonetheless, in my experience, it's true. Here's the thing to understand. On some level, we subconsciously want or expect something we're afraid of to happen. Not consciously, but subconsciously. Once we welcome this, we can release it. So that's my treatment. So when people come to me for treatment, when they have great fears and we talk about their fears, I talk about their fears and I always get to the fact that they are expecting it to happen, that they want the thing they're afraid of the most. I'm afraid of rejection. You want to be rejected. I'm afraid of losing my money. You want to lose your money. Now, how do we prove this? How do we make this? This sounds absolutely silly. Why would you be afraid of something you want to happen? And why would you want something to happen that's so terrible? I know the idea is hard to believe. You may be asking, why would I want to have a disease? You know, you have a fear of disease. Why would I want to be audited by the IRS? But consider it. When we see something in the world that we don't like, we think to ourselves, I hope that doesn't happen to me. Or I hope that never happens again. When the mind hears and pictures, of course, is the fear happening as though we've actually had the thought, I want this to happen to me. The more we think about something, the more we fear something, the more we tend to want the release from that fear by wanting the thing itself to happen. I hope I never get sick. And then you get sick. And finally, oh, okay, I don't have to worry about getting sick anymore. I am sick. You know? So somehow by fearing things, the more you fear something, the more you repeat the sticking point in your brain. You get it? It's sticking and sticking and sticking, and now you can't let go. You have this compulsion. You have this thing, this repetition in your mind. You keep thinking about what you're afraid of. I'm afraid I'm going to be invaded by cockroaches or something like that. And you have these great fears, and then it happens. And when it happens, the fear part is over. So somewhere inside, the brain begins to yearn for the very thing that you rehearse for over and over again by fearing it. It's almost like every time you experience a fear, you're promoting its eventual happening. When the mind hears, pictures, of course, is that the fear happening. I want this to happen to me. Thus, our creative energy starts flowing in that direction. And I mean our direction our mind goes that way. If we're afraid of rejection, our mind starts producing rejection so that we don't fear it anymore. We want it. We want it to happen. Doesn't this sound crazy? Doesn't this sound like, what? What kind of stupid humans are we? Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. So there's a way, there has to be a way. We may set reversed intentions and motions when we don't like something we've experienced. It may also happen that we don't want to have a particular experience, and when something tragic happens to a person we know or care about, like we're afraid it might happen to us, and we start setting up almost the desire for it to happen to us. It's common for such things to trigger our resistance. Remember, this is all going on below the level of consciousness. So we don't say, I don't want to lose all my money. And you see a number of people who are so afraid of losing money, they keep their money under a mattress. And then inflation comes along, and the $1,000 that they've put under their mattress and saved, which didn't collect any interest, is suddenly worth 50 cents. You know, and I don't want to lose all my money. And you're so frightened, and then your money's not there. Because it's worthless. We don't say, I want to have an accident, but you fear having accidents. And the people who fear having accidents have accidents. The people who spend more time preventing risk are the people who have the most accidents. Now, a good example of this, where's that article on risk? Hold on a second. A good example of this is on risk-taking. Here's the survey. According to the study, men are more likely to engage in riskier behavior than women. And, let me see, where was that? No, it wasn't this one. It was the other one. Here it is. Here it is. This is fascinating. If you wear bicycle helmets, right? The person, when they invented the bicycle helmet, people had more bicycle accidents after the bicycle helmet was invented than before the bicycle helmet. Why is that? Because once you had the bicycle helmet on, you were somewhat pulled away from the world a little bit. Because now you're a little more isolated. It protects you. It keeps your ears a little closed in. You don't hear as much. You don't sense as much. And you take greater risks. See, now that you know your head is protected, you do things with your bike that you would have never done before. And so people, when bike helmets became mandatory for many people, there were more accidents. Because people took more risks. Because they were afraid and they were wearing helmets. Not saying you shouldn't wear helmets. But suddenly they increase their risk factor because they have the bicycle helmets. They had the same thing happen when you had gas, when you had the balloons in cars, airbags. Same thing happened. Accidents increased. Safety belts, increased accidents following safety belts, because people felt more secure, therefore they took more risks. Sometimes having more security makes you more vulnerable to danger because you believe you're safe. Are you ever safe? I mean, does it matter if you're safe or not? Can you build in enough safety so that you don't have any fear? Is that what eventually happens? Do eventually you get to the point, is this the idea of it, Armand DeMille here with you, do you get to the point where you just have built your world secure enough and safe enough, and you have walls all around you, and you have a bulletproof car, and your kids go to safe schools, and there's no risk anywhere? Is that the way it happens? And then microbes come and get you? You know, then it's in the air, then it's a cold. I know one famous health nutritionist who never breathes fresh air. Yeah, this guy, he's a famous guy. His house is always conditioned. His air is always conditioned. He knows that there's pollutants everywhere, and everything that comes into his house is conditioned or changed or filtered or... And you wonder, you know, how does he get by? How do you get by in life? You live with so much fear, you know. People have to take off their shoes when they go in his house because they may bring in bugs or stuff on their feet. What's that like? Do you think the worry itself will shorten your life? Well, according to what we learned about Ukraine, it sure would. It sure does. So let's look at your greatest fears. Let's think about your phobias or just your fears. What are you afraid of? And what I'd like for you to do today is call in. Now, tomorrow, by the way, just to let you know, we are having a guest on, Hara Estroff-Morano, who is going to be doing a show on the Nation of Wimps. She's going to talk about safety in children and what that's all about and how that's worked for us to try to provide safety for our children. But today we're talking about safety for you, the adult, and your fear. Your fear. What are your fears? 212-209-2900. Now, I'd like to address a few practicalities, and we're going to be taking your calls. If you've been diagnosed with an anxiety disorder, understand that this information is not meant to replace your therapist or your doctor or, you know, whoever's trying to take care of you. Don't give up something. But, you know, when you're trying to work on your mind and try to get yourself a release fear, it's about focusing inward. Begin by bringing to mind something about which you feel afraid or anxious. And you can do that now. You may want to start with something small in order to see exactly what it is that you fear, you know. Something small. Could you think of something you're afraid of that's small? Okay. Give yourself a moment to notice whether there is a strong feeling of fear at the moment or a very light hint of fear. You have the hint of fear? Try to get the hint of fear. Simply observe it and welcome it. Now ask yourself, could you let go of wanting this to happen? Ooh. Let go of wanting this to happen. I fear my husband's going to run off with somebody else. Now, here comes the big step. Yeah. Now, imagine, let's say you have a fear of dogs, okay? Fear of being attacked by dogs. I know somebody who does. And she's a very stable person, you know, otherwise. But she has a fear of the dogs attacking her. She's lived a whole life with this fear of attack by dogs. Does it mean on some level she wants to be attacked by dogs? Does it mean that she has to find in her mind the desire for this to happen somehow? And to connect that desire, can you get to the point where you could feel wanting it to happen? You want to get it over with, right? 212-209-2900. It's a funny thing, my friends. I'm giving you the treatment. This is the lesson that you would get if you came and visited me with a fear and paid money to go to therapy. What many therapists will do is they will ask you if they're worth their salt, they'll ask you to visualize what it is you want to happen as opposed to what you're afraid to happen. Let's take a look at it. 212-209-2900. I see somebody's on the line. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay, great. Yeah, as far as fear is concerned, it's funny, you know, I have a big fear. I'm a smoker, and you know, I'm 27 years old, and you know, lately I've been like really, really concerned about lung cancer, and about, you know, like catching lung cancer. And it's funny how you say, you know, that we want these, you know, subconsciously we want these fears to manifest, and, you know, God knows I, you know, consciously I don't want this fear to manifest, but yet, you know, I find myself, especially lately, the first thing I'm thinking of when I'm waking up in the morning is that, you know, I gotta quit smoking because, you know, I fear this lung cancer thing, and you know, sometimes I feel like I have a lump in my throat when, you know, I probably really don't, and, you know, sometimes I think about this so much where, you know, it becomes even, like, hard to swallow, and, you know, I just feel like, you know, like, the power of the mind is, you know, a very mysterious and important thing, and, you know,
well, there's quite a few things here. What's your first name?
Quincy.
Quincy. Quincy, let's go with a couple of issues here, okay? First of all, I am not going to tell you you should stop smoking because that's too easy for anybody to do. All the non-smokers tell the smokers, oh, it's going to kill you. Forget that for a minute, okay? And let me also say to you, Quincy, that I understand completely the beauty of smoking.
Yeah, you know, it's very pleasurable.
Yeah, well, talk about it. I mean, nobody's going to allow you to talk about it but me. Talk about how wonderful it is.
Yeah, I mean, it is a wonderful thing. But as far as the smoke, I do want to clarify this. You know, I'm not talking about tobacco. I'm kind of like talking about green tobacco,
Yeah, but it's kind of wonderful, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, green tobacco specifically has a very high it has a very high caffeine, same nicotine content, if not higher nicotine content, you know? So people who smoke grass, for example, when they smoke it, they're afraid. But now look at what you have to give up. You have to give up this pleasurable thing that keeps you going. Your entire immune system is probably tied up to this constant use of this stuff. It keeps you in balance. It keeps you from getting rageful. But now here's the other question. Wouldn't it be great if you went to a doctor and the doctor said to you, Quincy, you got the beginning of lung cancer. And
you said, wouldn't it be great?
Wouldn't it be great? Can you imagine you go to a doctor, Quincy, and he says to you, that's it. You got the beginning. I saw a spot on your lungs. It's the beginning. If you take one more cigarette, that thing's going to get bigger. Wouldn't you almost be happy if it happened?
I wouldn't say happy. I mean, strangely enough, I sense that maybe there would be some, like, weird, bizarre sense of satisfaction. Like you said earlier, you know,
yeah.
I'd probably say, oh, finally, you know. But I definitely wouldn't be happy. I try my best to, you know, the means to get rid of it.
Yeah, so in other words, there would be some... You have a fear, not of smoking. You have the fear of getting cancer related to smoking. And so it's by your fear of it over and over again, in a way, a part of you is saying, give me that disease so at least I could have a release from this worry over and over again.
Right.
I understand. Yeah. So, in other words, we kind of create it in many ways. And I want to tell you, I understand that when you're addicted to marijuana or any other drug or even tobacco, people don't understand as much as I do and many other folks do how difficult it is to give it up. So you've got my respects, Quincy.
Oh, thank you.
And anything you could do or any way that I could ever help you to get you out of the bind that you're in, which is this dependency on something that you know is going to have consequences. You know, you wish it didn't have consequences, but it's going to have consequences. And if I can help in any way or any of the people I know can help you, please feel free to call, okay?
Oh, okay, great. And I just want to say this before I go, Armand. Just want to say I think you got one of the best shows on BAI, and you know, It's really, really, really thought-provoking, and I just want to say, you know, you do a great job. I love listening to you. And
Quincy, I consider that a real compliment. You know, it's an honor to serve in the way that I do.
Oh,
so
great.
Thank you, and thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you. All right,
sure.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're talking about fears and anticipated fears and how somehow everything we fear we may really want to happen. You know, like I know a man who's so afraid of his mother dying. And he lives for his mother. He's an adult man. He's 35 years old. He came to me for treatment and he said, I'm terribly nervous about my mother dying. I give her all my attention. I pay a lot of time. But he's given up most of his life. When we got underneath it, we found out he really wants his mother to die. He wants her to die so he could be free. And so that's why the fear is in his mind. The fear is substituting for the wish. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Let's take another call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, how are you, Armand?
Good. Who is this?
This is Tom.
Hello, Tom.
How are you? I tell you, Armand, one of my largest and greatest fears or anxieties is the feeling of being broke and not having the money or the resources to support my family.
Have you ever been broke?
That's my thing. I have been. And I was broke for quite a while. And I have 6 children. I have a beautiful woman. And the emotional and physical and mental stress that I went through during that broke period just to maintain a family and do the things that you have to do, it was took a lot out of my own life.
Hey, Tom, you have 6 kids?
Yeah.
That's a lot of kids.
You know, but they're all great.
No. I know that. I'm not criticizing you. But what I'm saying is that's a tremendous amount of responsibility.
Yes, it is.
And you have a wife, and you have some kind of a place that you live. Is it a house or?
Yes, we do. We have. We're okay now.
Okay, but now let me get this to you, okay, Tom? Have you always been this responsible? Have you always been somebody who's had such a burden of responsibility on his head?
I could say yes.
That's what it sounds like. I bet even when you were a kid.
Yeah, I was the oldest of 4 children.
So you had to take care of the other kids, and you had to help out your mom too, right?
Yeah, very good.
So here's the thing, Tom. Here's the theory. The theory is Tom wishes on some level, even though he fears being broke, he would love to just be able to say, I can't do it, and give up. And just for a little while, I mean, even though I know you've been forced into the situation before, I'm willing to bet that there is a tremendous desire to lay back and say, somebody take care of me. I'm tired of taking care of everybody. And that's what drives the fear. You see, the fear that you have of going broke in some way is a desire to go broke. And broke is an interesting word. Broke is a word like, you know, you can imagine a tree when it breaks. Mm-hmm. You're like a tree that's been supporting people on your leaves. And in a way, you want to break. You want to break so you can turn around and say to everybody, I can't do it anymore. Leave me alone for a while. I mean, how do you...
I don't know if I'm at that stage.
No, I'm sure you're not. Right? Oh, I'm sure you've got another 23 years. Of doing just what you're doing, you know? But, you know, you must be tired.
A little bit. But I have a great woman that helps me through it. And we appreciate the things that we have and the love we have with our children. And it's just that fear of ever going back to not being able to do what I want to do and give my children what I want that not only drives me but is the only fear that I have.
Well, you know, one may be a concern, and there's a big difference between concerns and fears. The fear, the one that drives you, if you're driven by fear, nothing's going to work. Driven by motivation and motivation of concern, that's different. You know, that's you look at things and you're... But if you get that nervousness and fear about being able to keep up and keep the money going and you worry about it all the time, you're going to give your kids a shortened life, you know? So I tell you... Tom, you got to get some time off for yourself.
Well, I think you're right. And if Jarrett and Johnny and Nikki and Zach and Hector and little Angelina give us that opportunity, I think we're going to take it. So I appreciate your input.
Thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Tom, thank you. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be taking more of your calls. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Paris qui n'est plus qu'un boulevard de cendres. De cendres.
That's L'Avenue d'Amour, L'Avenue d'Amour by Naomi. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. If you've just tuned in, kind of music that you could lay back to, you know, but trouble with laying back? Trouble laying back and taking it easy too much is when you lay back and you take it too much. If your mind is too active, there are people I know who are afraid to relax. And you ask them why they don't relax, because they're afraid their mind's going to take over. They have this war going on. Your mind is like this animal that's going to eat you up. And that if you're awake and you're not watching TV and you're not embroiled in some kind of emotional conflict, your mind is going to chew you up little by little. It's going to eat your brain. You know, it's like, it's almost like you're afraid of your own mind. Oh, don't give it. No, I don't want to think about that. I remember that incredible line from in Inherit the Wind. Frederick March says, I don't like to think about things I don't like to think about. Well, of course, people don't like to think about things they don't like to think about because they're afraid to think about things because they can't get out of the thought. It's this stuck record. It's this groove that you get into and you just can't get out of it certain times. Now, we've learned certain things about obsessions. You know, about obsessions, we've learned that you could get caught in a groove more likely with an obsession when your chemistry is in one condition than when it's in another condition. For example, the more vulnerable you feel, the more likely it is that you're going to get caught in obsessive thought. That's why, for example, people who have drops in estrogen, you know, they have sudden drops of estrogen, and suddenly if it's like premenstrual or perimenopausal or something like that, and you get into, suddenly you want to get into a fight. What does the fight do for you? The fight raises your dopamine. But how do you get into a fight when you're feeling all the way down and you feel moody? You have to use your brain to think about something. And you think about something that you're unhappy about, and you run it back and forth in your mind until you can get angry enough, and then you pick a fight with somebody. Now, you think the issue is real, but it's your brain eating you up. Fear is just like that. The things you fear. It's not that you should not be concerned or cautious or have trepidations or be careful somewhat. But to live in fear. The other day I went into a park. I was looking for the monkey bars. There are no monkey bars anymore. I grew up on monkey bars. You know what monkey bars are? They don't have monkey bars anymore. Well, most of the places I'm told have removed the monkey bars because kids fall on them and hurt themselves and the city gets sued and places get sued. Fear of lawsuits. Right? Litigiophobia. How's that? Made that one up. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. What are you afraid of? And we're proving this point here. Now, we're not proving a point, but here's my suspicion. To show you what a weird shrink I am. If you tell me what you fear, I'm going to ask you why you want it to happen. That's what's going to happen. You go to another shrink, you say, this is what I fear. The shrink will say, why do you think that may happen? But I'm going to say, why do you want it to happen? 212-209-2900 is our number here. We'll be taking some of your calls because we're asking you about your fears. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm Agatha.
Hello, Agatha.
I'm listening to you. I like your show.
Oh, thank you.
I'm first-time listener, but really, I don't have afraid from nothing. I don't have free. I'm not afraid.
From anything?
No.
Nothing ever frightens you?
No.
I could tell that. She said, it's not the first time you're listening to the program. You've listened to the program before. It's the first time you're calling, right?
Maybe like that.
Yeah. Where are you from originally?
From Europe, from ex-Yugoslavia.
Ah, so now, not many fears for you to leave there and come here. Did you come here by yourself or did you come with family?
I came here with my son, but I have a family here before me. I came here when was war in Croatia.
Yes.
I live there. And I have accident like a kid with the bomb. I can't see. I'm blind. I finished college. I have 14-time operation. I have a son. He finishing college here. I'm fine. I'm fine with everything.
So you can't see. You're blind.
Yes.
You have been in the middle of the war in Croatia.
Yes.
You have a 14-year-old son.
Yeah. No, he's in college now.
He's in college now.
Yeah.
And how do you get through? Were you ever afraid?
No.
Yeah, so some people are born without fear.
No, I'm not afraid at all. And I believe in good. I believe in God. I believe in good. I believe all the time God is going to help me. God is going to help me with my son. He's an excellent student. He's a good boy. He's working.
But there must have been times, Agatha, when you were worried about whether or not you could make it work with your son. There must have been times when you were concerned as to whether or not...
Okay, worried and afraid is different.
Good. What's that difference?
Yes. Because when you're worried, you're thinking about that and you're talking. But if you are afraid, that is in your mind. You're all the time, you're thinking, you're afraid.
And so now...
That's good.
Now, what about people in your family? They're the same way you are, nobody's afraid?
No, they are very strong people.
They're very what?
Strong.
Strong people. And in Croatia, you think most of the people were strong?
Really, I am combination. I am Yugoslavian and Albanian.
Yeah.
My daddy and mom was... But I am fine.
Well, nice to hear.
But you have excellent show for people who need the help.
Yes, and do you know some people who need the help?
Really, I know them, and they calling me. I said to them, I'm not a therapist.
Now, it sounds like you might be a very good therapist to a lot of people.
I am physical therapist, but I'm not.
Thank you for calling in, Agatha.
Okay, and God bless you.
Same to you. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille talking with you about fear. Hi there, you're on the air.
You know, because I remember when I was 4 years old, I had this obsessive fear of being underneath a car. I remember, I think I must have seen someone get hit by a car once, and then I became obsessed. What is it like to be underneath a car? And I couldn't get the fear out of my mind. I used to go lay down in the middle of the street when there was no one around, daring myself, just imagining if a car came over me, and then I would get scared and get up and run away. And one day, I actually did get hit by a car, and I can remember the moment the car hit me and I fell underneath, I said to myself, so this is what it's like. And then it was gone, obviously,
exactly.
The fear, but it was exactly the way you said it, a release from this obsessive fear.
Amazing, isn't it?
But you know something? Now I have, that was when I was 4 years old, you know, but now I have another... Well, I have a two-pronged fear. One is the claustrophobia, which I told you about. And there, the fear is that there's not enough air. I don't know why. It just comes to my mind there won't be enough air, even though I know there would be and all that. But that's just the fear that I wouldn't be able to breathe. That's on the physical level. That's my biggest fear. The other fear on the emotional level, and I know you're going to hang up on me after I say it, but it's the truth, you know, although it's diminishing. But I think since I reached menopause, it's diminished, I have to admit. But every once in a while, it wells up. And that biggest fear is that Jerry, who I adore, that he really has a desire for this other girl at work, you know, and the look of radiance on his face when I've seen him look at her. It's a look of radiance that I know in a million years he would never have for me, but he has for her. And he's acknowledged it in the past. Now he says that was then. He has no feelings for her, blah, blah, blah.
I know. Wait. Now, yeah. You know, usually when you said, you know, now I know you're going to hang up on me because I'm going to get into this thing about Jerry, because every now and then when I talk about it, people don't want to hear about it.
Yes.
And you have great fears related to that. My deepest respects to you. I know that getting through, you know, each day has been a challenge for you as well.
But you know something? There might be a light at the end of the tunnel. You know the phrasing, Deus ex machina, God from the machine. As it turns out, where I work at the post office, it's on machines. Now they might downsize, which means that Jerry, because he's one of the juniors, will have to go on, and he's not going to lose his job. No one's getting
fired. Okay, now wait,
he'll have to go on a night shift, and he'll be separated from her, and all my problems will be over, because he'll never have to see her again, or I won't be working with him. Let's say they both went
okay,
on a
now
night
wait.
shift.
Now, wait. Now I'm going to have to stop.
I know.
Okay?
I got carried away.
Thanks for calling.
But, you know, it might
happen. That's it. That's it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. I have a fear of getting carried away. But you see the obsessive thought and the way the thought works in some way, you know, it's just like it almost produces itself. But she did bring up that point about what it's like. See, she said she had this fear about being dragged under a car, and I've known so many people who've had fears that the minute the fears hit, they said, this is what I was worried about. Now it's over. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
It's Anna, and thank you for another great show.
Thank you, Anna.
Okay, I'm going to make this quick. I for the last 15 years, I've been writing, and I am terrified to send the stuff out because I think I'll be rejected, and I don't think I can take that pain. And yet I do want to send this stuff out.
Okay, so let's say the following is true. That you have this stuff that you write and you want to send it out, but you're afraid to send it out because you're going to be rejected, because they're going to send it back to you and say, no, thank you. Right? Now, that is no big deal. So the fear of being turned away when you offer something has to, in your case, symbolize some earlier fear.
What I'm afraid of is how I'll take that.
Okay, Anna, so now I'm going to ask you another question, okay? As well as this one, I want to ask you something. When you were a kid, who was your worst source of rejection? Your mother or your father? Which one of the two?
I think it was my father.
When you went to your father with something and you asked him, Dad, what do you think of this? How did he treat you?
No interest.
No interest. And that's exactly what he would say to you, no interest. And look at this. This thing you fear is that if you send out your manuscripts, people are going to say no interest. They're going to say the very same thing that you're afraid your father was going to say to you.
And what I'm going to hear is, listen, you're no good. Don't try. You're one of the ones that are broken.
And that's what your father used to say, right?
Well, he never said it. He never said nothing. But I guess that's the feeling I got.
That's the feeling you got. So one of the things you're dealing with, Anna, in a way, you're not facing the very thing that was the pain from early childhood. This isn't about, when you're a writer, 100 people reject you for every one that accepts you. So it's like part of being a writer. It's like being an actor. You know, you go for auditions. You don't expect people are going to say yes. You expect they're going to say no, but you try for the yes.
I know that. So what can I do to break through this?
You got to deal with this fear with your dad. You got to deal with these feelings from your dad. And I don't know if you've been in therapy or successfully been in therapy, but a short-term therapy that focuses directly on this early experience with your dad will fix that.
Dead a long time.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, and if I say to myself every day, so they'll say to me, no, we're not interested in this. This is not good. Would that help?
Just you have to say to yourself, it's not Dad I'm sending it to.
It's not Dad.
It's not my father.
Gotcha.
It's not my father who I'm sending it to. Thank God that bum is dead.
Okay, I hear you. And listen, when are you going to do that show on charisma that you once said you might do?
Oh, I thought I did it.
Oh, I must have missed it.
Yeah, I'm sure we did do a show on charisma. Yes, we did.
Okay, I'll look it up.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thanks for being alive.
Thank you, Anna. Bye. As opposed to your father, right? Hey, 212-209-2900. See, you know, sometimes there are great keys. When you look at a fear, you look at key words. And, you know, and it's like Anna had key words of what she feared. You know, not good enough. We can't use you. You're one of the broken ones. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand, great show.
Thank you.
This
topic resonates with me so much, you cannot believe. And I think the fear that I have is the fear of success. And I'll give you two examples. One is a rather mundane one, but the second one I think is much more prominent. I love to play golf. Anytime I have the opportunity, and I play often, but when I'm teeing off and I have to go over water, the first thing I tell myself, oh, man, don't go in that water. And inevitably, 8 out of 10 times, I go in the water. Now, more importantly, I think I'm very well educated, and even when I was in school and grad
school. But it's kind of amazing, isn't it?
It's really amazing. And,
it's
and
really,
when,
the,
it,
when it's in your mind, it goes right there.
Exactly, exactly.
And you know, I wish I could tell that to people. I wish people could see it as clearly as you do, because, in effect, every time people date for the first time, you know, when they meet each other, I hope he doesn't turn out to be like my father. Boom, right in the water.
Exactly. Now, the other thing I think that's much more prominent and much more, well, much more serious, I think I'm a very well-educated guy, and I've gone to grad school, and I went to law school, and I came out, and I had this fear of not passing the bar and not living up to my potential, and as God is my witness, inevitably that is what happened, you know, and it's been, and I lament over it, and I mean, my friends say, you know, I'm one of the brightest guys that they know, but I think it, in my mind, in my subconscious, I am always nursing this notion that I'm not going to succeed, and I think it's been inbred in me from my childhood, particularly from my mother.
Okay, let's go. What's your name?
Richard. I've called before.
Yeah, Richard. I recognize your voice. Let me take this with you for a minute.
Sure.
You had a great fear that you would fail the bar and not live up to your potential.
Exactly, yeah.
And you therefore failed the bar, but I got to tell you something. Mm-hmm. You did live up to your potential. Not that you didn't, because passing the bar is not what you wanted. That wasn't your potential. That was their potential. And Richard wanted to have his own potential. Richard, if you passed the bar, you would have probably been owned by your family. And you struck out for independence. And people do that so often. They call it a fear of failure. They're a fear of success. Sometimes you just refuse to succeed by somebody else's standard, because if you succeed, then they own you. And you struck out for yourself by failing that bar, or by not passing the bar is the way I would say it, which is different than failing it. You struck out in your own direction. Now, maybe your mom didn't love you as much because she wanted to have a lawyer as a son who would give her a lot of money or something like that. But you were tired of that conditional love anyway. So you became you. How did you get by? As a guy who didn't pass the bar, how could you have possibly gotten by? How did you get through life? What's the most fun you've ever had? I bet you've had most fun than most lawyers I'd ever know.
I tell you this. Well, I just certainly feel that not measuring up or being told as a kid, you know, having the word stupid prompted, laid on you. I think in my subconscious, it just stays there, you know, and I think when I give voice to it, you know, I know I'm not, but I think somewhere within me, that kind of like always shows his ugly head, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. It makes a lot of sense. And here's one of the things we learned. When you keep replaying a voice over and over in your head, such as this one of your being stupid and so on and so forth, it means that on some level you still need to be connected to them. The way you're connected to your mom and your dad is you have their voice playing in your head like a recording.
Okay.
Because I could hear it, and anybody listening to you can hear it. Certainly you're not stupid. And certainly you're a man of intelligence. You're a man of a good heart. You're a man of discerning values. You know, I mean, I would want you on my team any day.
Well,
you sound like a beautiful guy.
Thanks a lot, man.
Oh, it touches me. Good. Thanks for calling in.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Richard. It's hard to take those words, you know. As soon as I said that, Richard wanted to get off the phone. Of course. Of course. Because, you know, sometimes we want to believe we're damaged, we're broken, there's something wrong with us. Any of you who ever reached for a goal and you didn't make that goal, you probably, it wasn't your goal in the first place. Probably it was a goal for exactly the wrong reason, you know? And so maybe your fear of not passing the test was your desire not to pass the test. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind. We've talked about fear today. Tomorrow, be sure to tune in. We're going to have a very lively guest, and we're going to be talking about risks and the nature of risks. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. If you want to hear the show again, you can go to thepositivemind.com or WBAI.org. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. You can send me an email, Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D is my name, at brainlink, BRAINLINK.com. This is the Modern Jazz Quartet, Blues in H.
Armand, would you call me in the studio, please? Armand, call me in the studio.